views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. Each week, you'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Kelly Neff, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio on Transformation Talk Radio, Starcom Radio, CRN Digital Talk, and more. I love having guests on the show, but today I feel like doing something different. I'm not even going to do my whole intro today. I feel like I want to mix it up. And I want to put some super good vibes out there. And yesterday, I was hanging out at home, and I randomly picked a book out from my bookshelf, which I have so many books. I'm an avid collector of actual books. Maybe people say they're outdated. I don't know if anyone younger than 25 even reads real books anymore. But I love them. And I have all different kinds of books, books from, you know, that publishing companies and producers have sent me, books that I've purchased, books I've been gifted. So I just kind of walked over to the bookshelf, and there was this bright yellow cover grabbing my eye, and I picked it up, and it was The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying by Sangyal Rinpoche. And I started reading it, and I just found it incredibly inspiring and awesome. And I decided that, you know, I think today I'm just going to read some excerpts from this book and talk about it. But what really is interesting is the idea of the actual nature of the mind and how we bring the mind home. You know, we live in insane times. No matter how you slice it, people are very stressed out, very distracted, not present, grasping and striving and struggling. And on top of all of that, April's going to be a pretty difficult month. If you believe in astrology, if you believe the planets affect us, there will be no fewer than 5 planets in retrograde in April, which can just make us feel off or unbalanced. It can slow things down. Right now, Venus and Jupiter are in retrograde. Saturn goes into retrograde today. It's April 5th. And then Mercury and Pluto are also joining the party. In case you're wondering what that means, a retrograde is when the Earth essentially outpaces another planet in its journey around the sun, which creates the illusion that the planet is moving backwards to us on Earth. So what that means is that everything that the planet astrologically governs can go a little bit haywire. So when there's 5 planets, that's a lot of things that can go wrong. Now, even if astrology isn't your thing, and I get that, we can still agree that life can get stressful and out of control, and that constantly grasping and striving can take us out of the present moment, and it can create worry and anxiety and rumination. And often people get stuck in these downward cycles where they then can't stop worrying, and it can lead to mania, it can lead to depression, it can lead to a whole bunch of psychological traits that are unpleasant and hard to deal with. And I think this is why this section of the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying really just resonated with me so deeply and really grounded me so deeply. In case you were wondering, Sangyal Rinpoche, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. If I'm not, or if you just want to talk about that, you can call into the show today. I'd love to hear from you and your thoughts about the true nature of mind, meditation, enlightenment. We're going to talk about a lot of this stuff, bringing the mind home. You can call in at 1-800-930-2819. That's 1-800-930-2819. If you want to chat with me about any of this, including your experiences with this book, Sangyal Rinpoche he's still alive, a Tibetan Dogen Lama of the Nyingma tradition. born in Kham in eastern Tibet. He was recognized as an early age as the incarnation of a great master and visionary saint of the 19th century, Tertön Sangyal Larab Lingpa, I'm probably butchering that, who was a teacher to the 13th Dalai Lama. And in the last 30 years, Sagyal has been traveling all over Europe, America, and Asia. He is the founder and spiritual director of Rigpa, which is an international network of over 100 Buddhist centers in 23 countries around the world. And this book that I'm going to read from, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, has been printed in over 30 languages and 56 countries, and it's sold millions of copies. I think it was published around 20 years ago, give or take. So this is, you know, I should also say I do, people ask me a lot what if I'm religious, if I'm Buddhist. I certainly think that Buddhist faith and Buddhist spirituality and Buddhist teaching can offer us a lot of amazing tools for dealing with our reality. So on that note, I'm just going to start by reading this section. It's about the mind and the nature of the mind. I'm a psychology person, and so I find it really interesting, the idea that everything is kind of a construction. And this section kind of explores what that construction is like and how it makes us feel when we're not in control of it. So the still revolutionary insight of Buddhism is that life and death are in the mind and nowhere else. Mind is revealed as the universal basis of experience, the creator of happiness and the creator of suffering, the creator of what we call life and what we call death. Now, there are many aspects to the mind, but two aspects stand out. The first is the ordinary mind, called by the Tibetans Sem, S-E-M. One master defines it as that which possesses discriminating awareness, that which possesses a sense of duality, which grasps or rejects something external, that is mind. Fundamentally, it is that which we can associate with an other, with any something that is perceived as different from the perceiver. So in this sense, Sem is the discursive, dualistic, thinking mind, which can only function in relation to a projected and falsely perceived external reference point. So Sem is the part of our mind, the element of mind that thinks, that plots, desires, manipulates, that flares up in anger, that creates and indulges in waves of negative emotions and thoughts, that has to go on and on asserting, validating, and confirming its existence by fragmenting, conceptualizing, and solidifying experience. The ordinary mind is the ceaselessly shifting and shiftless prey of external influences, of habitual tendencies and conditioning. The masters liken Sem to a candle flame in an open doorway, vulnerable to all the winds of circumstance. And I just want to pause here to kind of discuss this, because for me personally, I know what it's like when my mind is jumping all over the place and I start thinking obsessively about things. And the more you continue in this practice, the stronger it becomes and the harder it is to kind of relax and detach. And this is something that our society, if we look at social media, technology, it's almost like feeding fuel to this fire, because we have all these devices that are constantly like beeping and letting us know like, hey, give me attention. Take yourself out of your present awareness and talk to this person or type to this person or read this trolling comment or whatever. And it just becomes like this never ending cycle of always grasping and validating and asserting. And it's very exhausting. So I'm going to continue reading now. Seen from one angle, Sem is flickering, unstable, grasping, and endlessly minding others' business, which I like, minding others' business. It's energy consumed by projecting outwards. And in psychology, we talk about being other projected, that, you know, sometimes people can get into a space where all they care about is the way that other people see them. They're not really living for themselves. Everything's about their reaction. And I'm sure you probably understand, even from social media and stuff, what that's like. In the book, he talks about it as a Mexican jumping bean, or as a monkey hopping restlessly from branch to branch on a tree. So that kind of that idea of the monkey mind, that's where this comes from. And yet in another way, this same ordinary mind that we're talking about also has a false, dull stability, a smug and self-protective inertia, a stone-like calm of ingrained habits. Sam is as cunning as a crooked politician, skeptical, distrustful, expert at trickery and guile, ingenious in the games of deception. It is within the experience of this chaotic, confused, undisciplined, and repetitive Sam, this ordinary mind, that again and again we undergo change and death. So that is one way of looking at the mind, change and death. So there's a lot of pain in Sam, but there is another innermost essence of mind, which is absolutely and always untouched by change or death. At present, it is hidden within our own mind, our Sem. It is enveloped and obscured by the mental scurry of our thoughts and emotions. Just as clouds can be shifted by a strong gust of wind to reveal the shining sun and wide open sky, so under special circumstances, some inspiration may uncover for us glimpses of this true nature of mind. These glimpses have many depths and degrees, but each of them will bring some light of understanding, meaning, and freedom. This is because the nature of mind is the very root of itself in understanding. In Tibetan, we call it Rigpa, a primordial, pure, pristine awareness that is at once intelligent, cognizant, radiant, and always awake. It could be said to be the knowledge of knowledge itself. But do not make the mistake of imagining that the nature of mind is exclusive to our mind only. It is, in fact, the nature of everything. It can never be said too often that to realize the nature of mind is to realize the nature of all things. I love this. It's very universal. Saints and mystics throughout history have adorned their realizations with different names and given them different faces and interpretations. But what they are all fundamentally experiencing is the essential nature of the mind. Christians and Jews call it God. Hindus call it the self, Shiva, Brahman, Vishnu. Sufi mystics call it the hidden essence. And Buddhists call it Buddha nature. But at the heart of all religion is the certainty that there is a fundamental truth that this life is a sacred opportunity to evolve and realize it. Now, I find that very, very comforting and, again, incredibly universal. All of this talk about whose God is the right God or whose God is the true God, maybe what we're really all talking about when we talk about as God is this universal awareness, this radiant consciousness that exists outside of time and space. And that's, again, extremely and incredibly comforting to me. So that was just a little bit about the true nature of mind. I'm going to take a quick break here on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly. And when we come back, I'm going to talk more about this. I'm going to read you another section from the Tibetan Book of the Living and Dying. We're going to talk a little bit about the four faults or illusions of the nature of mind, and then also start talking about practices for bringing the mind home. So stay with us, and we will be right back after this short break.
You, yes, you, can be the highest version of yourself. Wellness coach and natural beauty expert Dr. Agnes Frankel is on a mission to help you play the game of your life. Win in vibrancy, health, and beauty. Because you deserve it. Dr. Agnes goes beyond the limits in her personal coaching sessions to revolutionize health and wellness. Now is the time to unleash your true power. For more information, visit dragnesfrankel.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
When your body is awakened, and your spirit comes alive. Dana Canetto is a transformational guide, embodiment coach, and spiritual mentor assisting women in realigning with their truth and embodying who they are by connecting to the wisdom of their body. Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio and the Dr. Pat Show Network for Body Divinity Radio with Dana Canetto. For more information on Dana and her services, visit DanaCanetto.com. That's DanaCanetto.com.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhyay and Steve Tanijo on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
Introducing The Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit The Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and today I'm just getting into a super heady spiritual vibe, reading some excerpts from Sogyal Rinpoche's Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. When we left off, I was mentioning how the true nature of mind is something that every religious tradition has a word for, and that's especially true when we talk about Buddha and what is Buddha. And I think this is a really great description of it for people who are either unfamiliar or just looking to think about things in a different way. And again, this is, I'm on page 48 of the book. In case you have the book or you want to get the book, I recommend reading along. And also, if you want to call in and chat with me about any of this, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my meditation practices and experiences a little later. But you can call me at 1-800-930-2819. That should get you through to me, hopefully. Now, let me get back on this. Now, when we say Buddha, we naturally think of the Indian prince Gautama Siddhartha, who reached enlightenment in the 6th century BC and who taught the spiritual path that is now followed by millions all over the world, known as Buddhism. Buddha, however, the term has a much deeper meaning. It means a person, any person who has completely awakened from ignorance and who has opened to his or her vast potential of wisdom. A Buddha is one who has brought a final end to suffering and frustration and discovered a lasting and deathless happiness and peace. But for many of us in this skeptical age, this state may just seem like a fantasy or a dream or an achievement that is so far beyond and so out of reach. But it is important to remember that Buddha was a human being just like you or me. He never claimed divinity. He merely knew that he had the Buddha nature, the seed of enlightenment, and that everyone else did too. The Buddha nature is simply the birthright of every sentient being. And I always say, I'm quoting the book, our Buddha nature is as good as anyone's Buddha nature. Now, in other words, Buddha's message that enlightenment is within reach of all holds tremendous hope. Through practice, we too can learn to become awakened. If this were not true, countless individuals down to the present day would not have become enlightened, and people probably wouldn't be following this tradition. That's just my two cents here. And again, a lot of religious traditions put things kind of, you know, well, not necessarily. I mean, Jesus Christ was a human, right? Well, he's the son of God, but I mean, he lived as a man, you know, and there are a lot of interesting parallels here. It is said that when Buddha attained enlightenment, all he wanted to do was to show the rest of us the nature of mind and to share completely what he had realized. But he also saw with the sorrow of infinite compassion how difficult it would be for us to understand. So even though we have the same inner nature as Buddha, we have not recognized it because it is so enclosed and so wrapped up in our individual ordinary minds, or the SEM. Imagine an empty vase. The space inside is exactly the same as the space outside. Only the fragile walls of the vase separate one from the other. Our Buddha mind is enclosed within the walls of our ordinary mind, but when we become enlightened, it is as if that vase has shattered into pieces and the space inside merges instantly into the space outside. They become one there, and then we realize they were never the separate or different, but they were always the same. And that's the idea. We have within us more than we can ever imagine. And I really like the segment on being kind of like skeptical and saying it's like a fantasy or a dream or it's BS to even try and all of those things. And I think it's natural for people even on a spiritual path to question themselves and question their beliefs and question what they're doing and why they're doing it. Maybe they haven't seen the evidence that they need to see or the proof that they need to see to know that it's real. But this book actually talks about that a little bit later in the section. Whatever our lives are like, our Buddha nature is always there and it is always perfect. We say that not even Buddhas can improve in their infinite wisdom, nor can sentient beings spoil it in their seemingly infinite confusion. Our true nature could be compared to the sky and the confusion of the ordinary mind to the clouds. Some days the sky is completely obscured by the clouds. When we are down on the ground looking up, it is very difficult to believe there is anything else up there but clouds. But all we have to do is fly in a plane to discover above us a limitless expanse of clear blue sky. We should always try and remember the clouds are not the sky and do not belong to the sky. They only hang there and pass by in their slightly ridiculous and non-dependent fashion, and they can never stain or mark the sky in any way. So the sky-like nature of mind is our Buddha nature because it's free, open, and limitless. There's a poem here from Dujom Rinpoche. He says, "No words can describe it. No example can point to it. Samsara does not make it worse. Nirvana does not make it better. It has never been born. It has never ceased. It has never been liberated. It has never been deluded. It has never existed. It has never been non-existent. It has no limits at all. It does not fall into any kind of category." And that's what we're talking about when we talk about that true awareness, that it supersedes everything and it always will exist and always has continued to exist. Now, metaphysically, maybe that's a challenging sell for people. There's also a poem here from Nyingshul Ken Rinpoche who says, "Profound and tranquil, free from complexity, uncompounded luminous clarity, beyond the mind of conceptual ideas, this is the depth of the mind of the victorious ones. In this, there is not a thing to be removed, nor anything that needs to be added. It is merely immaculate, looking naturally at itself." I think that's really nice. Now, I wanted to get to this before we move on to the meditation chapter. I thought this was quite fascinating psychologically, this idea that Sonyal Rinpoche presents of the four faults, which is, why can't we perceive the depth and the glory of this limitless consciousness that exists primordially, the blue sky, when all we can seem to see is clouds? And there are four faults or four mistakes that actually parallel a lot of what we talk about in psychology that he talks about. And these four mistakes essentially prevent us from seeing the true nature of our minds. Now, the first fault is the idea that the nature of mind is just too close to be recognized, just like we can't see our own face, because unless we're looking in a mirror, but without a mirror, we can't really see our face. The mind finds it difficult to look onto its own nature. It's like so deeply embedded within us. Secondly, it's too profound for us to fathom. We have no idea how deep it could be, and if we did, we would have already, to a certain extent, realized it. Number three is that it's also too easy for us to believe. All we need to do is simply rest in the naked, pure awareness of the nature of mind, which is always present. And that's something that we'll talk about when we talk about bringing the mind home, that meditation is really designed literally just so that you can sit in the pure awareness of your naked, unabridled mind. And then fourthly, which I think is also really important, is the true nature of mind is almost too wonderful for us to accommodate. The sheer immensity of it is just too vast to fit into our narrow way of thinking. We just can't even believe it, and we can't imagine that enlightenment is real and enlightenment can be ours. So But we contrast all of this. We look at our society. He calls it a cult of delusion. And I think that we're programmed by this cult of delusion to be good consumers, to take on the norms of our society and those rules, and to really discount our value as human beings and what we really can create and really offer. And, you know, this is a massive contrast to a civilization like Tibet, for example, where Rinpoche is from, where, you know, the society is kind of developed. It's developed to be devoted to the pursuit of enlightenment. But here in the modern Western civilization, again, we live in a cult of delusion. And that's only compounded by more and more and more distractions to make us think they're important. There is really no general nature information about the nature of the mind. We don't really write or talk about it so much. It's not in popular culture. It's kind of starting to appear, but it's not really presented to us. But despite this massive and nearly all-pervasive denial of the existence of our true nature of mind, sometimes we get fleeting glimpses of it. And these fleeting glimpses, they're these little tiny beautiful moments that kind of make life amazing. For example, they could be inspired by a certain exalting piece of music, or by the serene happiness we sometimes feel in nature, or even the most everyday, ordinary situation, like watching snow slowly drifting down, or seeing the sunrise behind a mountain, or watching a shaft of life falling into a room mysteriously in a moving way. These are these moments of illumination and peace and bliss that strangely stay with us. It's because that is truth. That is showing us the infinite beauty and wisdom that we have within us, reflected back at us, I think. I just had a moment like this yesterday. It was blizzarding outside, and I was just watching the snowfall, and I just felt so completely at peace, almost like out of my body. Just to wrap this section up, it's that, you know, we understand these glimpses, but modern culture gives us no framework to comprehend these glimpses. And rather than encourage us to explore them, we are told in obvious and subtle ways to shut them out. And we know no one will take us seriously if we try to share these beautiful moments. So we ignore what could really be the most revealing experiences of our lives if only we understood them. And he talks about how one of the darkest and most disturbing aspects of our civilization is ignorance and repression of who we really are. And one thing that I think is amazing is how this is changing. This book was written, say, 20 plus years ago. And I do think that there's a massive upswelling of people who are working and teaching us about how to embrace who we really are. And you can just look at some of the guests that I've had on the show recently, just so amazing, and all examining these different aspects of kind of like what humans can really do and what we can really achieve and how we can find that connection and reprogram our brains and everything like that. So anyway, I hope that was an interesting section on the true nature of mind and how we can come to grasp it more. When we come back here on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, we're going to talk about how to bring the mind into focus by looking in and really the three techniques for meditation. And I'm going to tell you my reviews of kind of working with these techniques and using them. So stay with us, and we will be right back.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Hi, this is Carol Dorian, here to tell you about the new and improved Spiritual Diagnostics, coming to you every Tuesday at 2 p.m. starting April 25th. We will be having new amazing guests. We will have new spiritual topics for the new year. So look out for our new revamped show, Spiritual Diagnostics, Psychic Answers and Spiritual Solutions, April 25th at 2 o'clock.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com, that's Jen with two N's, morgan.com, or call 206-9000. 972-5366.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I am here reading from the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. I want to talk about bringing the mind home and what that means. And again, I have so many thoughts on this topic, but what I want to do is just start by reading this segment. Many of you know the story, but Thich Nhat Hanh has a beautiful poem about the story of Buddha that I want to share. And just as you're listening to this, just kind of reflect on this feeling that's captured by this story. It's quite an amazing feeling. Over 2,500 years ago, a man who had been searching for truth for many, many lifetimes came to a quiet place in northern India and sat down under a tree. He continued to sit under the tree with immense resolve, and he vowed not to get up until he had found the truth. At dusk, it is said, he conquered all of the dark forces of delusion, and early the next morning, as the star Venus broke in the dawn sky, the man was rewarded for his age-long patience, discipline, and flawless concentration by achieving the final goal of human existence, enlightenment. At that sacred moment, the earth shudders as if drunk with bliss. And as the scriptures tell us, no one anywhere was angry, ill, or sad. No one did evil. None was proud. The world became quite quiet, as though it had reached full perfection. This man became known as the Buddha. Vietnamese master Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful description of the Buddha's enlightenment is as follows. Gautama felt as though a prison which had confined him for thousands of lifetimes had broken open. Ignorance had been the jailkeeper. Because of ignorance, his mind had been obscured, just like the moon and stars hidden by the storm clouds. Clouded by endless waves of deluded thoughts, the mind had falsely divided reality into subject and object, self and others, existence and non-existence, birth and death, and from these discriminations arose wrong views, the prisons of feelings, craving, grasping, becoming, the suffering of birth, old age, sickness, and death only made the prison walls thicker. The only thing to do was to seize the jailkeeper and see his true face. The jailkeeper was ignorance. Once the jailkeeper was gone, the jail would disappear and never be rebuilt again. I love that. That gave me chills when I read it the first time, because I think we can all agree that sometimes we feel like we're trapped in a prison, and it can be a prison of ignorance, either our own or other people, a prison of pain, of suffering, of grasping, becoming, striving, all of these things we're trying to do in life, which are important, but they can really weigh us down. There's a whole amazing study of Buddhism. I'm thinking about the samsara and the Wheel of Life, Buddha's Wheel of Life. I just got finished reading David Nitern's Awakening from the Daydream, which is another book that I strongly recommend. It's just the idea that all of life is kind of this illusion, like a dream. And the root of this ignorance is our mind's habitual tendency for distraction. And to end distraction would be to end this endless wheel of suffering and to bring the mind home through its true nature. And my goodness, do we live in an era of distraction. And really the way we end this distraction is through the process of meditation. Sangyal Rinpoche says in this book that the gift of learning meditation is the greatest gift you can ever give yourself in your life. And it is only through meditation that you can undertake the journey to discover your true nature, to find the stability and confidence you need to live and die well. I should say that the biggest theme of the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying is the idea that death is a part of life and that the way we die indicates the way we live this life and how we go forward into the next one. And there's other chapters in the book where he talks a lot more about this idea and the idea that, you know, they would watch their masters die as they were old, and they would observe and they could see the consciousness leave and flip and switch. And so part of this meditation is to be able to drop into the space where we can start to work with these elements of our greater mind. You know, as far as teaching meditation goes, there's so many different ways to do it. Every time is different. And he even says in the book, you know, I must have taught it 1,000 times, but each time is different and direct and fresh. And indeed, you know, we are starting to become more aware of meditation. It is definitely transcendent of all dogma and all religion. This little segment here talks about how generally we waste our lives, we're distracted from our true selves, we're endlessly in a cycle of activity, but meditation is what brings us back to ourselves, where we can really experience and taste our full being with beyond all of our habitual patterns. Our lives are lived in an intense and anxious struggle, a swirl of speed and aggression, competing, grasping, possessing, and meditation is the exact opposite. The mind is very flexible, and if we train it, anything is possible. But training doesn't mean like forcibly subjugating or brainwashing. Training means practice and learning, and there is essentially a heart behind it. As we're so fragmented into so many different spaces, so many people suffer from mental illness. You know, at least 20-30%, maybe more, undiagnosed, have some kind of mental illness because we live in, you know, such a fragmented world. Our minds can't stay still or focused for more than a few moments without flipping out and going to something else. You know, it's really hard to concentrate. Political struggle, contradictory voices, fear of the media. There's all these feelings. There is essentially, we have to look at it, that there's a fight for control over our inner lives. And it often leaves nobody home, nobody behind the wheel. So what we have to do is bring the mind home. And there are so many different techniques for doing this. So many methods of meditation and skills. And these are really discussed at length in the book. I don't think there's any right or wrong way to meditate. This is obviously the Dogzen Tibetan Buddha's way of doing it, which has been used for thousands of years. A little bit about myself. I used to love meditating. I would lay down and close my eyes, and I could actually feel my brain waves switch. We've talked a little bit about the brain waves. I had Aubrey Marcus on a couple weeks ago, and we talked about the different kind of brain waves and, you know, what they do for our body. And I could literally feel myself kind of going into alpha and theta, and then I'd kind of fall asleep and I'd wake up, and it was very trippy because I'd have all these visions as I was kind of dropping out or dropping into whatever strange in-between land I was in. And I used to love meditating like that. But the Tibetans kind of suggest that you're better off sitting up straight with your eyes open. And This has to do with, and I'm quoting, the masters say, if you create an auspicious condition in your body and your environment, then meditation and realization will automatically arise. So the posture is not esoteric pedantry. The whole point is to assume the correct position to create a more inspiring environment for meditation in the awakening of your Rigpa or your greater mind. So there is a connection believed between the posture of the body and the attitude of the mind, that mind and body are interrelated, which we know from a lot of other practices and even yoga, for example. So you want to be sitting, and again, this is a different posture. I've been practicing with this posture. It's essentially you want to keep your back straight like an arrow so that your prana can flow easily through the channels of your body and your mind will find its true state of rest. The lower part of your spine has a natural curve, but it should be relaxed and upright. Your head should be balanced comfortably on your neck. Your shoulders should have strong poise but without any tension. Sit with your legs crossed. You don't have to sit in full lotus, which is emphasized in more advanced yoga practice. The cross legs express the unity of life and death, the good and bad, skillful means and wisdom, masculine and feminine principles, samsara and nirvana, the humor of non-duality. You can also sit in a chair with your legs relaxed, but to keep your back straight. Now, one thing that they talk about in this practice is that you have to keep your eyes open. If you're sensitive to disturbances from the outside, you can close your eyes for a while and then quietly turn within. Now, once you have your established gaze, you can look downwards along the line of your nose at about a 45-degree angle in front of you. And your meditation and your gaze in Dogsen teaching should be like the vast expanse of a great ocean, all-pervading, open, and limitless. So don't really focus on anything in particular, but let your gaze expand. Now, I just want to very briefly share that I tried this technique this morning, and I integrated all three methods in the book, and I'll go into more detail about each method when we come after the break, using an object, such as focusing on a particular picture or a statue or stone or focusing on something, using a mantra, and then also watching the breath. I did all three of these methods today, and I focused on a Hanuman statue. And I'm not even joking. As I'm doing these techniques, my vision got so blurry. Everything started moving. I could see an aura around my Hanuman statue, which is crazy. I don't even know if like a statue can have an aura, but it was quite amazing to me. And I thought, I can't do this with my eyes open, staring at something. I need to close my eyes. And I kept trying to close my eyes. And then the more I kept opening my eyes, I was like, oh my gosh, I understand. And I started to drop in. And the next thing you know, 20 minutes had passed. And I couldn't believe that I had sat there for 20 minutes. So I guess what I'm trying to say is it is possible, people. But you kind of just have to try. And if you have a lot of discomfort and pain in your body, that usually has to deal with the thoughts that are coming in and out. We want to treat the mind like an ocean. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk a little bit in detail about each one of these three meditation techniques and what it means to treat your mind and your emotions like an ocean. So stay with us on Lucid Planet Radio. We'll be back to wrap up the show on the nature of mind.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Every day is another opportunity to bring magic into our world and create the reality we want to live. Intuitive Juliana Salofia and the Lady of Light New Age Boutique are here to help you on your journey. Whether you're looking for a reading, a workshop, or a class of the latest and unique metaphysical products or jewelry, the Lady of Light New Age Boutique has it all. Visit InspiredNewAge.com to schedule a session or class and feel the energy of the Lady of Light. Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
This is Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I have been reading from the spiritual classic and international bestseller, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And when we left off, I was talking about the Tibetan Buddhist techniques for meditation and how you need to have your eyes open, but kind of unfocused around 45 degrees. I just found an interesting passage of why the eyes should be open. According to the special luminosity practice of Dogchen, all of the light of our wisdom energy resides in the heart center, which is connected through the wisdom channels to the eyes. These are essentially the doors, in quotes, to our luminosity, so you keep them open to not block these channels. Also, when you meditate, keep your mouth slightly open as if to say a deep, relaxing, ah. By keeping the mouth open and breathing mainly through the mouth, it is said that the karmic winds that create discursive thoughts are normally less likely to arise and create obstacles in your mind and meditation. Rest your hands comfortably covering your knees. This is called the mind in comfort and ease posture. Something also important to remember is that this is a playful and fun thing, even though meditation is very serious and focused. Actually, it's really important to have balance and to enjoy your meditation time, that this is when you just get to relax and let it all go. Now, the Buddha, it says in the book, the Buddha taught 84,000 different ways to tame and pacify the negative emotions. We're going to talk about all 84,000 starting right now. No, we're going to talk about three meditation techniques. The first is using an object. It can be any object, a picture of a guru, a statue, an object of natural beauty that invokes a special feeling of inspiration for you, such as a flower or a crystal, but something that embodies truth for you. And he talks about some of the images in the book. Basically, stare into it and just feel the deep stillness and start to relax and leave your mind. We keep staring at it. If your vision goes blurry like mine did earlier, just blink a couple times and it'll kind of bring it back into focus. The second technique is reciting a mantra. And these are used a great deal in Tibetan Buddhism, but also in many other traditions, Sufism, Orthodox Christianity, Hinduism, uniting the mind with sound. And the definition of mantra is that which protects the mind. Essentially, it protects the mind from negativity, or protects you from your own mind. When you're nervous, disoriented, or emotionally fragile, chanting or reciting a mantra can change the state of your mind. It's because there's power in sound. There's a vibration and a frequency in the sound. It affects your subtle energy or your prana. He talks about a mantra in this book, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but the mantra is Om Ah Hum Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum. And this is a mantra from Padmasambhava. God, sorry, butchered that. But it's apparently the mantra of all mantras. And it is uniquely powerful for peace, healing, and transformation. Recite, if you're going to use a mantra, recite it quietly with deep attention. Let your breath, the mantra, your awareness become slowly one. And he talks about the kind of astonishing power of the mantra as well. And then the third method is watching the breath, very ancient, found in all schools of Buddhism. You know, breath is life. And just breathe naturally as you would. Focus your awareness lightly on the out-breath. Each time you breathe out, you're releasing and letting go all of your grasping and dissolving into truth. It's important not to get involved in too much mental commentary and analysis. Like, now I'm breathing in, now I'm breathing out. You know, for mindfulness, like, just be present and allow the breath to happen. But also, because there's always a but, don't concentrate too much on the breath. It's a practice of what they call calm abiding. They recommend you have about 25% of your attention on the mindfulness of the breath, and then another 25% of your awareness on just a continuous, a watchful awareness that checks that you're being mindful of the breath, and then the remaining 50% is just left on being spaceful and abiding, which I know it sounds very complicated. But this is just something that you can practice, and it's like shedding old skin, really. Yes, Sangyal Rinpoche also talks about using all three methods together, which is what I did earlier. So first, you rest your gaze on the object, a sacred image or something that resonates truth that just when you look at it. Then you recite the mantra, and you let its sound transform the energy of your mind. Try chanting it out loud. And then if you practice this for a little while, by the time you turn your attention to the breath, your mind will already be somewhat calm and you can just silently watch yourself breathing. And it's not that there's any amount of time that you should or shouldn't meditate for. It's more, you know, people always ask, like, how long should I meditate? Should I do 20 minutes in the morning? Should I do several short bursts throughout the day? You know, it's not really about that, but you know, 5-minute short sessions are great. Do 4 or 5 minutes, take a break for 1 minute. Don't let go of your mindfulness in the break. But sometimes when you come back between your breaks, you'll actually be a lot more focused. But again, there's no right or wrong amount of time. I think I did 20 minutes today, which was pretty shocking to me. But if I can do it, you can do it. my last thought for today, this went by fast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. My last thought is about the idea of the waves in the ocean, that when people first start meditating, they say their thoughts are running wilder than ever before. But this is a good sign, because if your thoughts are running wilder, it means you have become quieter and you are finally becoming aware of how noisy your thoughts have always been. So when these thoughts arise, don't give up. Just keep returning to the breath, even in the midst of all the confusion. Some people think when they meditate, there should be no thoughts and emotions at all, and they get annoyed and exasperated when thoughts and emotions do arise. And there's a Tibetan saying that he talks about, saying, it's a tall order to ask for meat without bones and tea without leaves. So in other words, as long as you have a mind, there will be thoughts and emotions. Do not become annoyed and think you failed when your thoughts and emotions come in. It's okay. Just as the ocean has waves or the sun has rays, so the mind's own radiance is thoughts and emotions. The ocean has waves, yet the ocean is not particularly disturbed by the waves. The waves are the very nature of the ocean. Waves will rise, but where do they go? Back into the ocean. And where do the waves come from? The ocean. In the same manner, thoughts and emotions are the radiance and expression of the very nature of mind. They arise from the mind, but where do they dissolve? Back into the mind. So whatever arises, do not see it as a problem. If you do not impulsively react, if you are patient, it will once again settle into its essential nature. I think that's really important. There's another saying in here that says, you know, when you're observing your thoughts and emotions, be like the family of your mind, be an old wise man watching the children play. When you have these difficult emotions, it's amazing how when you take an unbiased approach, your attitude can change and your whole atmosphere of your mind will change. So whatever your thoughts and emotions arise, allow them to rise and settle like waves in the ocean. Don't grasp at it, feed it, indulge it. Don't cling to it. Don't solidify it. Don't follow it. Just let it rise and let it fall. And you will soon see that thoughts are like the wind, that they come and go. Just allow them to flow freely through your mind while keeping your mind free of afterthoughts. I have a lot more that I'd like to say, but we're out of time. So if you guys like this show, maybe I'll do another one featuring a different book or the same book in a month or two, just chatting about kind of my experiences with all of this. I thought this was really nice and something different, and I hope it was relaxing for you. You can please contact me if you have questions. Just go to thelucidplanet.com and find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Search for The Lucid Planet with Dr. Kelly. And we have some good shows coming up. I have a Stanford psychologist on next week, Dr. Susan Edelman, to talk about love and relationships. And after that, I'll have Paul Armentano from Normal back on the show to talk about cannabis reform and what's happening right now. So I think it's going to be a nice rest of the month. Your challenge is to get a couple minutes of meditation in sometime after you listen to this. I dare you. All right. Light and love to everyone out there. And I will speak to you next week. Bye now.
You've been listening to the hit show, Lucid Planet Radio, with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in each week as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.